Hallo und herzlich willkommen zum Podcast Gleich und Gleich gesellt sich gern, dem Podcast für deine verständnisvolle und gleichberechtigte Partnerschaft. Ich bin Elu Falkenberg und ich freue mich total, heute mit dir eine ganz besondere Podcast-Folge zu teilen. Und zwar hatte ich eine ganz besondere Gesprächspartnerin zu Gast bei mir im Podcast, die New York Times Bestseller-Autorin Eve Rotzky. Eve Rotzky hat das Buch Fair Play geschrieben, in dem sie ein System vorstellt, durch das man sich Haus- und Care-Arbeit fair untereinander aufteilen kann. Denn wie du vielleicht weißt, gerät man oft in Schwierigkeiten oder steht vor vielen Herausforderungen, wenn man versucht, sich die Elternschaft oder die Partnerschaft wirklich fair und gleichberechtigt aufzuteilen. Und Eve stellt dafür ein umfassendes System vor, durch das diese Aufteilung eben gelingen kann. Das Interview ist auf Englisch, Eve ist Amerikanerin. Du kannst dir die deutsche Übersetzung aber auf meinem Blog durchlesen. Da habe ich das ganze Interview einmal auf Deutsch übersetzt in Textform. Ich stelle den Link dazu auch in die Shownotes. Das Buch Fair Play und auch die Fair Play Karten gibt es auch auf Deutsch. Bitte lass dich bei dem deutschen Buch nicht von dem Titel abschrecken. Das ist eine ganz unglückliche Übersetzung. Auf Englisch heißt das Buch Fair Play. Auf Deutsch heißt das Buch Auch Männer können bügeln. Ich finde die Übersetzung sehr, sehr unpassend. Es spiegelt auch nicht wieder, was in dem Buch eigentlich beschrieben wird und worum es in dem Buch geht. Also bitte lass dich von diesem Titel nicht abschrecken. Der Inhalt des Buches ist grandios und wirklich empfehlenswert. Die Karten, die Fairplay-Karten, die gibt es auch auf Deutsch. Die kannst du dir sogar kostenlos runterladen. Den Link dazu stelle ich auch in die Shownotes. Bevor ich dich jetzt dem Interview hier überlasse, möchte ich dir noch einmal sagen, dass die Türen für meinen Online-Kurs Verantwortung wieder geöffnet sind. Das ist ja mein 5-wöchiger Online-Kurs, in dem es darum geht, dass ihr als Elternpaar zum einen wieder zu einer gefestigten Verbindung und zu mehr Verständnis füreinander kommt und darauf aufbauend dann eine gleichberechtigte Aufteilung durchführen könnt. Ich gehe in diesem Kurs auch auf Eves Methode ein, auf die Fair Play Karten. Das kommt in Modul 3. Und da gehe ich dann nochmal genauer darauf ein. Ich stelle aber auch noch 2 andere Möglichkeiten vor, wie ihr euch da aufteilen könnt. Mehr Infos dazu findest du auf meiner Seite elufalkenberg.de/Verantwortung. Link ist auch in den Shownotes. Die Anmeldung zu dem Kurs ist bis Sonntag, 26.09.2021 möglich. Danach sind die Türen erstmal wieder geschlossen. Vielleicht führe ich den Kurs nochmal Ende des Jahres durch, das steht aber noch nicht ganz fest. Also wenn euch dieses Thema gerade beschäftigt, dich und dein Partner, deine Partnerin, dann schau dir das mal an. Wie gesagt, ich kann noch nicht sicher sagen, ob ich den Kurs dieses Jahr nochmal launche. So bist du auf jeden Fall sicher dabei. Alle weiteren Infos auf meiner Homepage und jetzt wünsche ich dir ganz viel Spaß beim Hören dieses Interviews. So, yeah, I've been waiting for this day to come and I'm so excited to have you here on my podcast. Welcome, Eve Rotzky. So happy to have you here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I feel so honored to be your first English language guest.
Yeah, it's very exciting for me. So I was a little nervous before, before today and even today all day long. But yeah, I'm very happy to have you here and to talk to you about or to talk with you about your book, Fair Play, a book that provides readers with a system of how to share domestic and care work. So I remember exactly when I was reading your book, Fair Play, I was so inspired because I really felt that we were having kind of the same mission that we're following. And I really remember my point when I decided I can't accept that inequality that we're still having, even in this 21st century. And I can't accept that for me, I can't accept that for other women, and in the end, I can't accept that for other men. So
just to share with you what my mission is. My mission is supporting parents in living an equal parenthood. So it's all about the equal parenting. And I remember how I got there, and I even remember a situation that was kind of an epiphany for me when I thought, okay, now's the point, you have to change something. When was that point for you? How did you get to that topic?
I'm laughing because it feels so silly now, but I read about this in Fair Play, as you know, that really, I guess they say all research is really me search for about yourself. But for me, this was about a breakdown I had on the side of the road after my second son, Ben, was born. It was a text. It came from a text that my husband, Seth, sent me. And that text said, "I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries." And what I don't get to talk about in the book as much, but Ela, you can help me sort of picture the scene, right? I had this, "I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries" text coming in. I was already texting and driving because I was living in Los Angeles at the time. I still do. I'm from New York, but I live in LA now. I had a client contract in my lap because I had opted out of the traditional workforce. Mm-hmm. And I say opted out in quotes because now I always say forced out. You know, women are always forced out of the traditional workforce.
Yeah.
But at that time, I thought it was my choice. I was doing it as of a choice. Yeah. But no, it was not a choice. I was forced out of the corporate workforce for having no lactation spaces, getting my direct reports taken away, right? These very insidious practices that happen to women when they become mothers, you lose pay. So that had happened to me. So I'd started my own law firm. I was marking up a contract in the car. I was already texting and driving. I have a breast pump and a diaper bag on the passenger seat of my car. I have tons of gifts to return in the back of my car. So nice, people gave us gifts, but I had these gifts to return for a newborn baby because, you know, all the clothes, the sizes didn't fit. And in all that chaos, right, all that, I was racing. And I forgot to mention, I was also racing at the time to get my older son, Zach, who was 3, from his toddler transition program. In America, those programs are not free. They're extremely expensive and they last about 10 minutes. You know, that's what it feels like, maybe like 2 hours at a time. Yeah. So I had just dropped him off. I was racing to pick him up, trying to do a little work in between, maybe drop off a gift to return. And then Seth decides to send me this text, "I'm surprised you didn't get blueberries." And what I remember of that day is just starting to sob. I just started to sob. I pulled over, which I don't normally do in LA because of traffic, and especially because I was afraid to be late to pick up Zach. So the fact that I was late to pick up my child and I pulled over meant that, you know, something was really wrong.
Yeah.
And as I started to sob, I think the things I would really think, well, I guess the funny thing I was thinking was it was so cliche that my marriage was going to end over being the fulfiller of my husband's smoothie needs, you know, you know, a smoothie is going to end our marriage. Like, I figured if my marriage would end, it would be something more fun or dramatic, an affair with a actor or a soccer player, you know, a football player, not, you know, this stupid fight over who's being home, you know, off-season produce. And then I think the more profound things I was thinking were twofold. One was, I don't have the career marriage combo I thought I was going to have.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. I was sort of shocked in the moment that was my reality. And then number two was I had become the default for literally every single household and domestic task for my family. I call that the she fault, even though this happens not just to women, but it is mostly a women's problem that we do 2/3 or more of what it takes to run a home and family. But I was just shocked that I had become this she fault. I did not expect my life to be that way. And so that day started me on a quest, a real quest, to figure out what was happening to me. And why?
And then you came up with an idea how to change that, right?
Yes. Well, what's funny is that I think there were three things I could do. One is I could divorce. You know, I could, you know, eat, pray, love that shit out of my marriage. But, you know, I had two young kids at the time. I still really enjoyed and felt compatible with my partner. I just felt like the dynamics had gotten so off kilter and the resentment had gotten so high that that I couldn't see through it. It was almost like a fog.
Yeah.
But I did know that I underneath it all, I really did have a love and respect for Seth. So I wasn't ready to do what a lot of my friends had done, which is to right the wrongs of their division of labor by getting divorced, because the power there is the other person has to wipe the asses and do the dishes, right? Because it's their custody days. So I did not do that. My other choice, I guess, was to resign myself to continuing to do it all and just continue to cry in my car and to rail against the unfairness with other women, which a lot of my friends would do. They would complain about their husbands or their partners in parties, work settings, everywhere.
Not at home.
Not at home. Not at home, right? We don't talk about domestic life, and we'll talk about that, why that's so toxic. But finally, my third path was to get my ass in gear. And Ilu, I decided to become my own client.
Yeah.
So my day job, what makes me different is I'm not a psychologist, even though I worked with psychologists to develop the Fair Play system. But I am a mediator. I'm a lawyer. I'm a behavior designer. I look at the law as the way to design behaviors. You want people to stop at a stop sign, you pass a law that they have to, right? So for me, I was in the lens of behavior design, that I love governance, laws, structure, rules, expectations. There are things that help us to design behaviors in society. And I figured, if I could use those, the ones I use with my very difficult clients that are the extremely wealthy of the world, the ones who make very difficult family business decisions and family foundation decisions, if I could do it for those families, which I had been doing for a decade, I could design a system for the everyday family, my family. And so I asked the most important question that I think I've literally ever asked myself in the past decade. And that was, how would my life look different if I treated my home as my most important organization?
Yeah.
That was the question.
Yeah. And I think that is one point that oftentimes blocks an equal partnership, the lack of knowledge about project management tools, because living in a home with several persons with children, there's the need for some project management tools, especially if you're willing to live an equal parenthood or equal parenting. So yeah, I'm really glad you chose the third way and asking you that. And what did you do afterwards? What happened then?
Well, what was fascinating was, then I started to ask my second most important question. So I thought to myself, well, if I treated my home as my most important organization, or if we all did as a society, in every nation, right? This is not just an American problem, as we know. That's why we're talking. This is a problem that is endemic to literally every society. Every society is built on the unpaid labor of women and the undervalued
patriarchal system.
Yeah. Every system, that we are familiar with, I couldn't find one that was not built on the backs of the unpaid labor of women. And then in many cases, the undervalued labor of women of color, if outsourced, in many ways. And so if societies can understand and start to revalue and bring some respect and rigor to the home, the way that we treat our workplaces. I know one woman said to me, her and her partner, they wait to decide who's taking the dog out, right? When it's about to take a piss on their rug, right? That's sort of how we make decisions in the home, right? We decide who's setting the table when we're hangry or cranky, or like texting each other, who's getting dinner tonight? And why don't you pick it up from the store? It's just, it's very, very chaotic. We are dying in decision fatigue and burnout in many, many of our segments of our society. And so my second most important question that I ever asked in 10 years was, how did mustard get in your refrigerator? And why I love that question was, I asked it in 17 countries, and I could just switch out the condiment if mustard wasn't a popular one. You know, ketchup in America, mustard in a lot of the European nations. It became fun to decide which condiment I wanted to use. But if I asked that question, how does mustard get in your refrigerator? What I got to, Ilu, was the crux of what was bothering me. What was bothering me is when I was talking to parents, even ones and other caregivers and people in couples who didn't have kids, but anybody who was trying to, even the best ones, right? People who are trying to be equally shared parents. The roadblock I got to was when I said, well, who makes the meals? Who takes the kids to the school? Who gives them baths? I kept hearing, but we both do it. Yeah. So that's a really dangerous answer. We both do it. In some ways, not if it's a fair play both, but if it's a regular both, it is dangerous because it conceals the different steps of project management that we have to be clear on. And so what do I mean by that? Well, what I mean by the way to get to what's behind the both was asking, how did mustard get in your refrigerator? So I asked a couple who said they both get groceries or they both do groceries, that question. And what I heard was, this was an opposite sex relationship. I heard from mom that she's the one who noticed that her second son, Johnny, likes yellow mustard with his protein. Otherwise he chokes, he won't eat it. So that phase of project management, we often call conception, where you notice there's a problem, you want to fix it, you're going to do something, take actions to change something or to do something a different way. So that conception happened. She noticed her son needed that mustard to eat his protein. And then she tells me that she monitors the mustard for when it's running low. And she checks the expiration date to make sure, I don't think mustard can expire, but you know, just in case. And she also get stakeholder buy-in from the people in her family about what they need from the grocery list, from the grocery store on the grocery list. Now, she didn't say stakeholder buy-in, but that's what I'm hearing because that's often a very common step in planning. And so I would hear that. And then I would hear, oh yeah, and then my husband goes to the store to pick up the yellow mustard and Eve, he brings home spicy Dijon every fucking time. And you want me to trust him with my living will? He can't even bring home the right type of mustard. That was it. That was the crux of the problem. The beautiful thing about being a mediator is we often say the presenting problem is never the real problem. And so we get to the crux of the issue, and it was an issue about accountability and trust.
Yeah, right.
And if you lose accountability and trust, I can't trust you to do X, Y, and Z, so I might as well do it myself.
Yeah.
Once you get to that, or you're not accountable. I can't trust you to take the kids to school because they're always late. Once you get into those patterns, your organization is failing. And in those types of organizations, people leave. In those types of organizations, people feel resentful. Mm-hmm. In those types of organizations, people don't want to be there. They get anxiety when they talk to their colleague or a person who's in that organization. And I was seeing the same thing in the home. I was seeing people did not want to communicate about domestic life, that it was too triggering. I was seeing high levels of resentment, and I was seeing a lack of trust. And so once I realized that's a classic organizational failure that we can start to rectify, right? There is such beauty in keeping the conception and planning and execution together to give context, not control, as Netflix calls it. It is a revolutionary concept. But Ilu, it's like telling people not to eat sugar. It's way easier said than done because there's a lot of baggage around the home and gendered expectations and toxic masculinity and things that we have to sort of rip off the Band-Aid to let the wound heal. And then we can enter a system that just makes sense. When you hold ownership mindset, when you have an ownership mindset in your home, I have dinner tonight. I will plan the menu. I will get the groceries or make sure they're there and I will get it on the table. That alleviates your partner from being involved so they're not nagging you. And more importantly, it allows that person to free up some of their own mental space. So that ownership mindset is the crux of fair play. It's what I developed after talking to now thousands of couples, again, in 17 countries. But I started as a 250-person data sample, where I kept coming back to them to beta test and beta test and beta test the system. So that's it. It's an ownership mindset. It's not rocket science. It is the antithesis of decision fatigue and saying we both do everything.
Yeah. And before I read your book, I wasn't aware of the fact that it's called conception, planning, and execution. However, I think we might have used a kind of similar system. We used something that we called responsibility packages. So, for example, the responsibility package, doctor's appointment is not only taking the kid, going to the doctor's having the kid checked. No, it's calling at the doctor's office, making an appointment, having the insurance card. Thank you. Yeah, the insurance card. So you have to think of a couple of things, and it's not only the execution part. So without the knowledge of the CPE, we kind of used the.
I love it. I will quote credit you. responsibility package.
Yeah.
That's such a great term. And absolutely. And I think within that package, I think the beauty of calling it a package is there is a bit of thinking, right? The cognitive labor, there's a bit of planning and there's a bit of execution. And so in that package, keeping that package together so it's not, you know, spilling out all over the place, like keeping it as a nice package is a really pretty metaphor for the ownership mindset.
Yeah. And what is really hard, that is something that you already mentioned, is to get underneath of or to the point where things really matter or the things that are really important. Because as you said, the presenting problem is never the real problem. We are fighting over blueberries or the open toothpaste tube or single socks lying around, stuff like that. And I experienced it that for many parents, it is hard to get underneath that. And there's a lot of anger blocking that. What would you recommend? How could we get to this real, to the why, to the values, to the open needs maybe that are underneath?
Such a great question. It's a formula, actually, Ilu. So it's not rocket science. I found the people who are able to do this, again, because I have a really beautiful data set now of people who were thriving during the pandemic in their fair parenting and their fair caregiving and their fair coupledom. It's really a three things. It's boundaries, systems, and communication. So we just reversed the formula. We started talking about systems first. So we got that out of the way. Hopefully your listeners understand, again, the idea of the ownership mindset, the responsibility package, the idea of CPE. But if somebody says, well, I can never trust that my partner would own the full CPE, right? Then that's a problem with boundaries and communication. So let's go to boundaries, because I think it's really important. If it's a secret formula, then we need not just the system, we need the other two wraparounds. It's like a sandwich. So if it's a system sandwich, the bread on top is the boundaries. And what I mean by that is why fair play couldn't just be, it's a metaphor. There's 100 cards. You own a card. You can trade it with full ownership at any point, whether it's an hour, a day, a week. You don't want to be doing bedtime routine forever. You can share that card. By share, I mean redeal. So you hand it over to somebody with ownership mindset. By share, I do not mean the both. We both go to the grocery store. By share, I mean you equally take, you can equally take that card one night, one night, one night, one night. But when you hold it, you hold it with ownership mindset. But to get there, we have to go through the bun, the boundaries and the communication. So the boundaries piece is why I decided to write to women. Because if it was just a system, I could just present it equally to men, women, LGBTQIA couples, any family system, because it's just not rocket science. It's just organizational management principles applied to the home. You own a task, you do it. You don't just say, you don't walk into your boss's office and say, hey, what should I be doing today? I'll just wait here till you tell me what to do. We know how to do this. We know how to take ownership with context. But the problem was that there's so many expectations over the housework and childcare that society has thrown on women and men and everybody, all people, that we have to peel those layers back. So the way we do that is by recognizing and setting a boundary that our time as women is just as valuable as men's time. Now, that's a very hard thing to swallow, because we've been taught our entire lives that our time, women's time, is infinite like sand, and men's time is finite like diamonds. Yeah. We know this because it's not just America. In global studies, if women enter a male profession, the salaries automatically go down. We know that we don't value women's time because we say things like breastfeeding is free. Mm-hmm. 1,800 hours a year, it's a full-time job. Definitely not free if you actually valued women's time. But the most insidious, Ilu, was women devaluing their own time. And that was the thing that started to trigger me so much that when I would talk, you know, I'd been in, say, you know, maybe 200 interviews at the time, my heart would pound with cortisol, because I just wanted to free women of their being what I call CIYOO. That was my acronym. And that stood for being complicit in your own oppression. Mm. So these are four ways that I just want to say that we have to be not complicit in our own oppression anymore. If we really want, as you said, to get to the why, we first have to remember four things. We have to remember that time is not money. Time is time. If you have a partner that makes more money than you, it does not mean that you deserve to do all the unpaid labor and childcare in your home. Time is not money. Because we know we can't live like that anymore, because we would always be in these patterns. Yeah. Because men make more money than women because their time is diamonds. So we have to insist that men do childcare and housework, regardless of what the money dynamics are in your house. If you're an LGBTQIA couple, same thing. I see that money often substitutes for conversation. Money does not mean you get a free pass from your humanity of raising your children and doing your housework in your most important organization. Yeah. Number two, it was women saying to me that they are better multitaskers, that somehow they're wired differently for care. Their partner's better at focusing on one task at a time. That is fundamentally false. There's no gender difference in the brain for how you multitask. I talk about that in the book. And I say that my favorite, actually, I don't say this in the book, this is off the record, but one of my favorite neuroscientists off the record said to me, imagine Eve we can convince you women, like he's talking about men, he was kidding around, but he said, we can convince you that you're better at wiping asses and doing dishes. We've convinced you of that. So I don't even have to ask you because you think you're better at it. How great for my leisure time, my golf game, my tenure. What the heck have we done to women that we are taking pride in perfectly wrapped birthday gifts, in iron clothes? It is society. It's society's expectations of us that have made us believe we're better multitaskers. Number three, in the time it takes me to tell him, her, they what to do, I should do it myself. We talked a little bit about that before. That is a toxic message, a toxic time message. And finally, this idea that I can find the time, right? That somehow my partner, I'm going to guard their time, but I can find the time. We are not Albert Einstein. We do not know how to mess with our space-time continuum. There's no time to find. There's just a different expectation over how women are supposed to use our time. And so my directive to you, I implore you to believe that you deserve as much time choice over how you use your day. If you have a partner that is helpful, but still gets 4 hours to watch TV after your kids go to bed and check a PowerPoint deck and work out, and you're doing things in service of the home until your head hits the pillow, that is fundamentally unfair. You've breached a boundary. And you deserve that permission to be unavailable and to use your time with as much choice as your partner. Now, that is a hard thing to swallow, Ilu. It is hard for women to hear that. It took me 10 years to really unlearn all of that. But that is the key to being willing to come to the table to have those conversations. That's why boundaries is a big piece. It's not just the systems. We have to be willing to say, I'm a game changer in my partnership. I'm not going to live like this any longer.
Yeah. And I really like the idea of usually women being the game changer, because sometimes I hear that it's so unfair that women now have to be responsible for their relationships to be equal. Also that they have to care for, isn't that enough that they're already doing? But I really like the idea of women being the game changer and setting boundaries and saying, well, I want the same amount of time choice as you have. This is my time. And what I think is so weird and is hard for me to understand is, if you're asking parents, what is the most important thing in your life? Every parent responds, well, my kid, my children. So then my next question is, so why is the time your wife in a heteronormative relationship is spending with your kid less valuable than nice. Your time as I don't know, whatever you're doing to earn money? How's that? I don't understand that. So yeah, I really...
No sense. You're right. Makes literally no logical sense.
Yeah. And I really liked the idea, what you were saying about not sharing the cards or not dividing into one is doing the CP and the other one is doing the E, because C and P is usually invisible, right? Where you don't get appreciation for usually. However, I really liked the idea of switching the cards and sharing from time to time, because I really like being as independent as possible from my husband. And he really values that too, the other way around, because there can be situations where, I don't know, someone is getting sick, real sick or whatever, and you're alone. And then it's really nice not to be dependent on someone. Plus, I really like the idea of a steady learning. So you learn new things whenever you exchange cards, whenever I'm changing the tires of the car, or I don't know, repairing stuff and so on. So yeah, I really like that. So what would you recommend if someone comes to you and says, well, I would love to really share cards, or well, divide the cards, divide the deck with my partner. But, you know, whenever he's cleaning the bathroom, I can clean once more afterwards because it's not clean. We don't have the same standard of cleaning. What would you recommend?
So that gets to our third piece of our formula. So I feel like you set me up really nicely, and that has to do with communication. Communication is a really tough one, Ilu, because like you said, a lot of people can't get underneath, right, the dirty sock or the blueberries because we're not used to communicating about domestic life. It's not something we've been taught. And so we end up in these very bizarre situations where out of the UK, someone just sent me a Facebook group. It's 27,000 members, and it's called The Reasons I Hate My Husband and Kids During COVID. And this one woman wrote in the group, if my husband dies during COVID, it won't be because of the disease, it'll be because of me.
Ouch.
So I was like, ooh, interesting. Okay, so she's threatening to publicly murder him in front of 27,000 strangers. So I DM her, I reach out to her, and I say, I'm a researcher, I write books on the division of labor. I'd love to know what your communication patterns are, how you communicate about domestic life with your partner. And she wrote back, this is my safe space. I don't communicate with my partner. This is my safe space. So I want to just reflect on that for a second. Are you in a position where talking to your partner feels so triggering that venting to 27,000 members, 27,000 strangers about murdering your partner feels safer to you? So many people end up in that situation, and it's so mind-boggling to me that the person closest to us, we are afraid to speak to. And it's often because we've tried it once and we've gotten bad feedback, or we've had somebody try to clean the bathroom and it's still full of pee everywhere, and you get so frustrated and resentful, you stop talking, right? And you get into these patterns of, I'm just going to do it myself. So that's why communication is really the key to your standards. Let's play a game for a second. So what I mean by that, and I'll say this to your listeners, you don't need the cards, but you can just, in fair play, there's 100 metaphorical cards. We actually have a card deck in English. Hopefully we're getting them translated into.
Yeah, there's a link that I will put in the show notes where you can download the German cards.
Yay. Okay. So that's really exciting. For the German cards, I'm going to do them in English because I don't speak German. But what's fun about getting to the standards is it really requires a deeper level of conversation, because the ownership mindset, the responsibility package, is actually pretty easy to get behind, right? That if you're in charge of your child's extracurricular sports, that it's also the carpool, it's also the birth certificate, right? That Seth, my husband, really understood more, but we were having a hard time around our standards. He held garbage. And I remember that I was still his garbage shadow, Ilu. I was walking around the kitchen and staring at him, and opening doors where the garbage liners were, saying like, when the freak is he going to put the new garbage liner in? And Seth was talking to me and saying, look, I'm happy to start working and trying out this new system of the ownership mindset, but you are stalking me over garbage and I need you to step off. And so I had to realize that in the workplace, it's enough to say you have an ownership mindset because we're all strangers. In the home, we need another step. And the step before you can get to who does what is you have to build your deck together. Yeah. You have to come together with the people in your family, if you're a single mother with your kids, if you're in a couple with your partner, and say what matters to us. I don't want you ever to say to me, Seth, that I do unnecessary things. So I want us to build our deck together, and then we can decide what matters, what our standards of care are. I call it the minimum standard of care. It's derived from the tort system in England that we use in America, which is a reasonable person standard. Would a reasonable person do what you did? And then that's how you build on your minimums. So let's just have some fun with how you can use the cards to get to some of these minimum standard conversations. Let's just pick one. So I'm just going to keep going like this and tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. So I just pick one. So I picked bedtime routine.
Oh, that's a good one.
So I want to hear about, and we're pretending we're in a couple or we're practicing these conversations. I want to hear about growing up. Not what you do now, but tell me about your bedtime routine growing up. What do you remember about it? Who tucked you in? Did you read books? Did you have family around? Tell me anything you remember about your bedtime routine.
Yeah, it was usually my mother who was telling me that it was time to go to bed. As far as I can remember, it was me, myself, I changed into my pajamas, brushed my teeth, and then it was my mother, bringing me to bed, maybe reading a book or telling me a story, and then leaving the room, switching off the light, and then eventually I fell asleep.
Were you alone in the room? Did you have siblings in your room with you?
No, I was alone.
Did you have an easy time going to bed, or did you ever wake up and go into her bed? Or
I remember, that's funny that you mentioned that. I remember right now that I was alone in my bed, and I'm always saying it like that. I don't know if I remember it correctly, but I remember it that I was not allowed to sleep in my parents' bed. So I was taught to sleep all by myself.
But there must have been a reason. So if you were not allowed in your parents' bed, that must have meant at some point you were trying to sleep in their bed.
Or at least I had the wish to sleep in their bed. And that's really funny because our kids don't sleep alone in their beds. We have three kids and they sleep in one room, even in one bed, in one big bed.
And do you think that was because you thought it would be more fun for them to be together? Because for you, it felt lonely to be alone.
I think it feels safer for them. Yeah. And either one of them is always staying with them until they all fall asleep. So they're never alone when they're falling.
Well, imagine I'm your partner. So this is so beautiful. So imagine I'm your partner and I come into the conversation. I say, our kids have to sleep separately.
Yeah,
I don't care if we live in another house, but that's really important to me that our kids sleep in separate rooms. And then you're like, no, they're sleeping together, right? You end up at these surface level conversations, but there's humanity in bringing why it's important to you. If you were able to say, look, I had these memories of wanting to be in my parents' bed and it didn't feel safe to me, or I know it'll feel safer to my kids from my own experience for them to have each other, to wake up in the middle of the night and see someone in the room with them, and it'll bring them closer together. Like that, by sharing your childhood and some stories that you just came up with, I know you better now. I feel like I have a better insight into you as a person. And it's just, we realize that these decisions we're making, they're not just chores, right? They're our humanity, and they affect our decisions for the rest of our lives. And so for me, going back to the garbage, what the breakthrough for me and Seth was my being able to remember when I was able to think, why am I so triggered about garbage? I was able to tell him a story about what it was like to be alone. My mother worked late nights. She was a single mother, and I had to put my disabled brother to bed. And he would ask for water. He's autistic. And he would ask for water. And I had to go into our little tiny New York City apartment kitchen and turn on the lights to get him water. And there would be a multitude of cockroaches and water bugs that would be crawling. So I had a routine where I'd walk into the kitchen with my eyes closed. I would turn on the lights. I would count to 10 because by then most of the cockroaches would scatter into whatever holes they were going back into. And then I'd get the water and I'd walk out of the kitchen. If I was smarter enough, I probably would have just gotten the water in advance, right? Before we went to bed. But I was a baby. I was a kid. And I was a latchkey kid pinning my brother to bed. So often I would forget and have to go back in the kitchen for a cup and water. So when I said to Seth, you know, seeing a banana peel, seeing garbage, it's literally like cortisol. My heart starts pounding. I'm a latchkey kid again. He was able to say, and so what do we do then when he can say to me, well, I never thought about garbage because I had a housekeeper. I could take it back, right? And say, well, I might as well just do it myself because I care more. But no, because that's what women are always doing. So I said, you keep the card, but let's come up with a minimum standard of care that I can live with. And that became that garbage goes out once a day. I'd love for it to go out every hour, but it goes out once a day at night. And he puts the garbage liner back in. He gets the diaper pail garbage and the little garbages around the house. That's part of the minimum standard of care. It's not just the main garbage. And then it started happening, Elu. It was like, literally, it was like a miracle. It was like, I finally cracked the code because the system wasn't enough. The communication around the why, our stories, our minimum standard of care that you get from these stories was the key. It was that formula, the boundaries plus the systems plus that communication formula was the key to unlocking the Fair Play system. And that's why I talk a lot about starting with your why. It is a very important piece of Fair Play to communicate using your why, not just your what. Mm-hmm. Go set the table, right? I mean, you're not going to communicate in your why all the time, but by investing in those conversations in advance, then you know why you do certain things.
Yeah.
I will always know now why your kids sleep in the same room, you know, and it's, or understand at least a piece of that. It's just, it makes us more human. And then we know those stories about ourselves. So we don't even just have to tell them to our partners, but if we feel comfortable, like a lot of times now I tell much more profound stories. I thread deeper. It's called threading deeper. That's mm-hmm. what conversation designers call it. You thread deeper with my colleagues. And that brings us closer to empathy and human connection.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think that's really beautiful, not only to connect more and on a deeper level with your partner, but also understanding yourself more. It's self-development, and you kind of can be, yeah, like a coach for your partner to help him yeah. or her digging deeper into your why, because sometimes it's really hard for yourself to dig deeper on your own. So I really like that. Refer to the connection, not only connection to your partner, but also to yourself. Thank you so much for sharing that.
And I was going to just say one more thing. If people are, you know, not ready for the system, what they can do is they can play, they can close their eyes and point, you know, to one of the cards or, you know, the German cards, and just pick out one and just say every night, we're going to check in for 5 minutes. We're going to play a game for a month where we just tell one story to each other, one story, 5 minutes, less than you spend on Instagram and Facebook. I promise 5 minutes you invest in your partnership by telling stories. Each and every card in the Fair Play deck has stories behind it. Each and every one does, because I know, because I've done it now with thousands of couples, and I've collected the most beautiful stories about each and every one of these things that we call chores that are not chores. They're our humanity.
Yeah. Right. So beautiful. I'm very impressed. So my last question for today is, well, ever since my husband and I started sharing or dividing this domestic work and this care work equally, I observed that he is a lot more caring, sometimes even a lot more caring than I am. And I'm pretty sure that this is his way of living his truth. I'm pretty sure that he is living his truth now, or at least he's closer to living his truth. And we both are, so am I. And we're living a lot closer to our authenticity. And this is something that really impresses me and really makes me proud. And I always knew that he was going to be a great dad, but it was kind of yeah, buried a little bit under this, yeah, this fighting and yeah, fighting basically around all these chores. And I really like that. I really like to see him now that way. Kind of, it's a little love confession here. And the reason why
I love him. Tell him I love him.
The reason why I'm sharing this is that I want that for my children. I want my children to be able to live up to their truths and to be able to be authentic and not being held back by a patriarchal system that forces women into unpaid labor and excludes men for a deep familiar connection, which is the other point on that in that system. So my last question is, how can we make sure to empower the next generation, maybe even across countries?
Such a beautiful question. Well, I will say that I'm seeing such beautiful things happening with Gen Z. Mm-hmm. There, two women took the year off because of COVID in America. They are at Brown and Stanford, and they just came up with a pledge to care, which was an open letter to corporations about what they need from those corporations to work there. And it was to parent out loud and to live in our authenticity and our humanity and to recognize that we are not going to be sitting in a chair for 15 hours a day and we get to leave at 5. And yes, of course, we can always check back in later, but we're going to leave at 5 to watch our kids' softball games. Yeah. To center care in our society is really, really important. And also, like you said, to recognize that masculinity in many, many countries, not just America and Germany, but many countries have been tied up now in the 20th and 21st century. And we can do a whole nother podcast on why, with the idea of breadwinning, of making money. And that is very limiting for men as well. So the system is not serving anybody. And so that's why I say I love your husband, because my husband says the same thing. He still works. He didn't have to quit his job to become a better father. He just needed to pay attention more, right? To recognize that part of his humanity, part of his legacy was going to be what his kids watch him do and how involved he is in their lives. And still, he's never been taught to communicate. So he's still avoided threading deeper in the storytelling. He always says, well, I don't remember. And I'm like, Seth, you had a whole life. Like, you want to remember. And then he will have stories that are so beautiful. And they're even more beautiful because he doesn't remember. So then he'll say, yeah, I remember this weekend plan. I wasn't allowed to watch Saturday morning cartoons. I had to do a book report. I'm like, oh my God, that's horrible. Like, maybe that's why you hate Saturday mornings, right? You start to get to know somebody. And so what I would say is, I think we're entering a new phase. I will say, I think about Germany a lot because I was, we connected over this, but I was in Davos right before the pandemic, and I got to talk to a German activist who said that, you know, you don't really have to use laws against women, active laws. You can do things like they were doing at some point in the south of Germany, requiring kids to come home for lunch, or having schedules that don't fit a normal workday, like kids getting out at inconsistent times, that keeps women out of the labor force. So what I would say is, you know, all of our countries, and I'm not saying America is any better than Germany. I'm saying there's a lot of countries that are better than America right now. We are at the bottom of centering care. But I will say that all countries can do better to recognize that how we design our schools, our caregiving institutions, our childcare, we have to make those decisions thinking about that men will do it as well.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. And thank you so much for bringing out that beautiful book and sharing all your expertise and your knowledge and just what you just said. Just know I've got your back. I'm here to support your mission because it's really in my interest as well that it doesn't stay the way as it is right now. So thank you so much for being here today and sharing all that beautiful stuff with me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having me. And hopefully we can do this again and we can do a whole other deep dive into why this happened. But I really appreciate you having me.
Thank you.
Ich hoffe, dir hat die Podcast-Folge mit Eve Rotzky genauso gut gefallen wie mir. Auch die Aufnahme war für mich wirklich was total Besonderes. Ich war sehr aufgeregt vor dieser Aufnahme und ich freue mich total, wenn sie dir was bringt. Und wenn dem der Fall sein sollte, dann freue ich mich auch extrem darüber, wenn du diese Podcast-Folge mit anderen teilst. Also teil sie gerne irgendwie auf Instagram, dass du sie gehört hast, oder empfehl sie FreundInnen, befreundeten Eltern, deinen Eltern vielleicht auch, wenn sie Englisch verstehen, oder ansonsten eben den auf Deutsch übersetzten Text. Ich finde, in dieser Folge ist ganz viel drin, was man ja sich so fürs Leben mitnehmen kann, ein Stück weit. Und ja, bin ganz dankbar, dass ich diese Folge mit Eve aufnehmen durfte. Du unterstützt mich sehr, wenn du diesen Podcast bei Spotify abonnierst oder wenn du mir bei iTunes eine 5-Sterne-Bewertung hinterlässt. Ich habe jetzt letztens eine Nachricht bekommen, dass der Podcast jetzt auch in Apple Podcasts in manchen deutschen Kategorien rankt. Und das freut mich natürlich sehr, dass das Thema der gleichberechtigten Elternschaft und Partnerschaft einfach auch so viel Gehör im wahrsten Sinne des Wortes bekommt. Und ja, du unterstützt mich einfach dabei, noch weiter in dieser Verbreitung des Themas oder auch Sensibilisierung für das Thema, indem du die Podcast-Folge bewertest oder den gesamten Podcast bewertest, ihn abonnierst oder einzelne Podcast-Folgen, wie zum Beispiel diese mit Eve Rotzky, anderen Leuten empfiehlst. In 2 Wochen gibt es die nächste Podcast-Folge. Bis dahin wünsche ich dir alles Gute und ich freue mich, wenn wir uns beim nächsten Mal wieder hören. Deine Elu.